I'm a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 172. A little drink of coffee there. All right, so, wow, I got a lot done today. Why did I get a lot done today? Okay, so for two nights in a row, I slept like horrible. So the other night when I did my show and I was telling you how I had my best time in the mile, which actually I was wrong. I was 100 meters off of a mile. My best time in the 1500. Someone told me that a mile was 1500 meters at one point, and I just been thinking of that as a mile, but it's actually like 1609 meters. So I needed two more down and backs, but I still would have got it in under an hour. And I, you know, that's not very good comparably when you talk to people who actually swim. But it was pretty good for an old fat guy like me. So, yeah. So I've slept. Like, I thought I was beat. I was so tired. And I thought, man, I am just going to drop and sleep so hard. Went to bed nice and early. Boom, nothing till like 1 something. I could not go to sleep to save my life. Then the next night, partially the reason you got a rerun, I was just so out of it. I just worked all day at the day job on not much sleep, and then went in and just slept again. Just like woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and could not go back to sleep. So two nights of rough sleep, and then the heavens opened. The clouds parted, and last night I went down early, and I read for a while. You know, I'm going to sidebar on what I read. Paul McCusker read over, read might be a strong word, covered my first chapter of my book in red ink might be a better description. But he's a great writer and understands story very, very well and how to convey it. And I got his notes back, and I had like 6 days from the day job off, and I was going to try to get the next draft of the book done, and I got it back, and I was like, no, the project is to learn how to write, evidently. So I'm just like, it was very humbling. But he didn't get into the chapter that represents the rest of the book. The first chapter is kind of a big tale, and then there's an actual book. So, long story. One of these days, I'll get this stupid book done. You guys will get to read it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Anyway, so we were talking about children's books, and children's books that are written in a way that children can understand them, but they're great for young adults and adults, right? And that Lewis and Tolkien always said that children's books are not just for children. The same way the fairy tales aren't just for children either. There's a forecast for what's coming on the show today, by the way, Lewis. Anyway, so he recommended that I get this particular kind of a fantasy children's book and see how the voice is in this. So I downloaded this book, and it was just delightful. It was just so easy to read because it's like, but it wasn't like a little bitty kid, C.O.C. Dick run, see Jane run, you know, that kind of thing. It was, you know, a fantasy book, a science fiction fantasy book. But so I slayed there and read that for a while last night, but then just went to sleep like almost immediately. And when I woke up this morning, I woke up exactly 1 minute before my alarm, naturally. And I looked at the sleep cycle, my software that I use. It's like I put the book down, dropped into the absolute pit of deep sleep, and did not come out of it for over 9 hours. I mean, I went to bed at like 9 o'clock. I set the alarm for 7. I was like in the pit, like just where you're supposed to just kind of trough down and then kind of turn back up. I was down there for just forever. And it's funny. They say that deep sleep is when your body does its restoration, and the higher forms of sleep are when your mind kind of repairs. And so there were just some aches and pains and fatigue and stuff in my body and in my joints and stuff the last couple days. And after that night's sleep, I woke up and I was just, that was all gone. And then when I weighed this morning, I was like lower than I was way lower than I was yesterday. So it kind of like that ebbs and flows, right? You know, based on hydration and stuff like that. But anyway, that's all to say that I finally got a good night's sleep. But so I don't know what to do with it. I kind of have a little bit of a frenetic energy. I don't have a ton of focus because my mind didn't get to kind of get its good solid defragging last night. So I went from tired and ADD to ADHD. So I got my H back at least, you know. All right. So, you know, I had an experience yesterday. And as I saw, I was like I said last night, I was just dead. So I was on my way home thinking about what I was going to cook for dinner, and I'm like, I'm not cooking for dinner. I'm just too tired and I'm starving right now. That's the other thing is I just, when I work a big long shift behind the bar, I just forget to eat. And I end up just sitting and drinking coffee half the time. So on the way home, I said, you know, I'm just going to go to Whole Foods. So I went to Whole Foods, got a bunch of vegetables, put a couple of smoked chicken thighs on top of it. On the diet, doing well. And then went out and sat down, and I saw a couple of guys, the pastor, a couple of local churches here in town, or maybe they're two pastors of the same local Protestant church that come into my shop, and they were sitting outside having a meeting. So I had a nice conversation with them, and shout out to the guys from the Upper Room. And so I sat down and here's the experience that I had. I noticed this kid, like kind of a young hipster kid, and he rolled up to Whole Foods on a skateboard, right? And you know, I skated for like 14 years, and I skated deep into my 20s. When I was the same age as some of the people who work for me now as grad students, I was still skating several hours a day at that time. Never was sponsored, was never that good or anything. Had friends who were sponsored that I skated with, got a few free things in here and there there towards the end, but never was good enough to even get a video or get sponsored or anything, but just did it for the love of it. You know, it was so fun. And so I have a real soft spot, and I'm very, very opinionated about skateboarding, right? And so this dude rolls up on a skateboard, and it's like what's become popular is these retro boards, right? You know, the longboard thing's gotten huge, the big long boards that is kind of, you just carve like surfing, and everybody you see on these longboards, and even some of the tiny, 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 like little 70s boards have gotten popular, which I'm just not even going to touch. I'm like, that's just idiotic. But this dude rolled up on a board that like I would have had in mid-high school, early high school. I mean, it looked like it was like my first real board was a Rob Roskopf Santa Cruz. And if you are old enough to remember skateboarding at all, you know anything about skateboarding, you remember that back until the late 80s, we didn't really have a good kick nose on the boards, right? And I remember getting, we used to even turn the front bolts on the front truck upside down so you could, your foot would catch on those. Because you needed something to get real good high ollies. You needed something to kind of catch your foot so that you can then lift your back foot and get that centrifugal force to pull it up and get some height, right? And when I think the first board that I had was a Andy Howell from Schmidt Sticks was the one that had a big fat up kick nose. I even had a shirt that had a little cartoon character kicking himself in a big fat cartoon nose, and it said get a little kick in the nose. But that just changed the game. And then the double ended kind of almost symmetrical boards kind of became normal, right? And that just, I loved it. I had a double vision deck, which was absolutely symmetrical but still pretty wide, but big round kick tails on either end. I adored that board. Anyway, so this dude's rocking like an old school, like 80s board with no nose on it. And I got mad. I got super ticked. I was just like, why would you give up what we fought so hard for, what we finally got, what sucked so bad? And I realized That's how all the liberal hippie baby boomers in the Catholic Church feel right now. We're the young generation have gone back to adoration and frequenting confession and taking the Eucharist and the liturgy seriously. Vocations are on the rise. And that whole hippie deconstructing generation that thought they were setting everything forward see this as just a going back. So I was sitting there eating smoked chicken thighs and vegetables next to two Protestant pastors, watching a kid with a skateboard without a nose come by, and I had an insight into why we still have felt banners and bad Marty Haugen and Dan Shute songs. So why do we still have the Gather hymnal? The same reason. So there's an insight into how my bizarre brain works. I see a kid with an old school skateboard, and it makes me understand felt banners in the Catholic Church. I think that seeing patterns and allegories and kind of connections between things that probably aren't exactly there, or maybe that are there that just no one else could see if you weren't extremely ADD like me, I think that's my superpower. I think that ADD is my superpower. I think that my spirit animal is the squirrel, because I always say that I am ADOS, attention deficit. Ooh, squirrel. Yeah, so there you go. Oh, man, you're thinking, why do I listen to this guy? He's obviously insane. Hey, I have something about that, too. But let's go to the break first, and when we get back, I'll tell you why I'm insane. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right. So after talking about my epic night's sleep, which was sorely, sorely needed. I mean, this was such an amazing... I'm tempted to put the graph up on the show file on Podbean when we cache the podcast. I mean, it's visually stunning. I mean, if you've ever seen a normal sleep graph, it like goes up and down and up and down. This is like, you can see like a little like kind of up, down, way up top. That's me reading, right? Because I went ahead and set my software. Then you can see the moment I set the book down, rolled over, fell asleep. And that was I just hit, like I dropped off the cliff, like below the little thing that says deep sleep. I was slightly below that. Like, I think I was just a couple clicks above dead and just for like 9.5 hours. I mean, it was just I set a 7 o'clock alarm, thinking, well, I'm going to wake up before that. The light's going to come through the window. Cause you know, I live in Denver and we don't really have air conditioning in the house, but we have this big old swamp cooler. But when summer rolls around, I have to sleep with my door a little open and I have to crack a door to get a draft. And so I normally have everything shut down, pitch black when I sleep. And that's just cause my room, I have a little air conditioner in my room and it's broken. It's leaking all over the place. So I think I'm going to have to, get me a new air conditioner. But normally when the light comes in the window, I wake up, right? Not today. I'm telling you, it's visually stunning. You want to see this graph. I'll put it on. I need to start being more interactive with the Facebook page. I'm going to commit to you that I'm going to put this episode on the Facebook page and I'm going to tag it with the picture from my sleep app. Pardon me, I have to sneeze. Excuse me, goodness gracious. There's radio without a net. You get live sneezes. I should have hit mute or something. I don't know how to do that. I should figure out how to hit mute on this thing so I can not sneeze in your ear. I apologize for the sneeze. Anyway, so sleep, skateboards as an hermeneutic for understanding hippies in the Catholic Church. And then I promised you as I was going to the break, I was going to tell you why I'm insane. And you're all thinking, of course, we know why you're insane. We've been listening to you for 172 episodes. We're very well acquainted with the nature and extent of your insanity. And that very well may be true. But I have a new reason or a new evidence or a new aspect in which I think I might be insane. And that is that I read an article that talks about, now a lot of people are disagreeing with this too, but people who are chronically late all the time, that's an evidence that they don't have the normal tracking, kind of the internal clock for time. And that is a sign and often coincides with like a lack of mental health, or maybe they're just claiming it is a form of mental illness to not be able to have your internal clock tracking correctly. And as you guys have noticed that, I always forget going and forget about breaks. I've been 5 to 15 minutes late for everything I have ever done in my life. And it's, I got in here, got this computer open, got set up, got my mic on my head to do the show like 33 seconds before I needed to be going. It's like, I'm just, and I thought I had all this time in the world to get down here where I need to go do my thing. So, hey, I hope this sounds kind of buttery. I'm hoping to pick this office up. There's an office under kind of near that conference room, which has been, that I used to record in sometimes, which has now been less than quiet because new tenants moved in and they go in and out of it all the time, even if you have the door shut. And so there's an empty office that I'm hoping to rent, and I've got access to it. And I think the sound in here is kind of buttery. I mean, it's not a studio, but it's just walls with this acoustic tile, kind of, you know, typical bad office, but I think the sound's pretty good. I'm kind of happy with these episodes I'm recording down here as far as the sound quality. Let me know if you like the sound quality on this. If you don't, well, tough, because this is where I get to record now. So yeah, evidently being late all the time is a sign of mental illness. Well, I've been late for everything I've ever done in my entire life. 5 to 15 minutes at least. It's brutal. I admit it. It's bad. I have a problem. I have no concept of linear time. It's just, you know, Einstein once was asked to explain relativity, and in layman's terms that anyone could understand. Then he said, now this isn't exactly what relativity is, but he jokingly said that a minute sitting on a hot stove feels like an hour. But an hour with a pretty woman seems like a minute. So he was acknowledging that, you know, time, sometimes time passes quickly. Sometimes time passes slowly. And those are because the experience of time, which is the number of motion, according to Aristotle, for all you TACers and great bookies out there, that's one of the only things I remember that Aristotle said about time. But time is what keeps everything from happening at once, right? And that's why there was no time before creation. That's why there's eternity. It's just an eternal now, right? Because there's nothing in motion, because the only thing that was before creation was God. There is, technically speaking, no motion in God, because motion is a movement from potency to act. And there is no potency in God because he's pure act. Boom, man. I did remember some of that Aristotle and St. Thomas, didn't I? First time for everything. Yeah. So your internal experience of things, you know, will make it, you know, time flies or do I press it? Was it like tempus volat in Latin? Boy, I'm just classical education and it up today. Time flies or time drags, right? But that's talking about our internal experience of the thing, I think, right? What if everybody What if everybody just said, man, is it just me? I mean, I've seen this happen. You're in a shop, you pick up kind of the, when you run a coffee house and you're kind of talking to different people from different places and different types of work and different schedules, over the course of a day, sometimes you'll pick up a theme. Like, there's sometimes just on a Tuesday when everything else seemed normal, everyone who walks in the door is exhausted and just like, man, I slept like crap last night. Now you're thinking, of course you meet those people, you run a coffee house, but it's only sometimes, and you'll notice that it's everyone, or everyone will be off by a day, even though there wasn't a holiday. You'll hear some, you know, 6-7 people over the course of the day going, God, I've been thinking it's Tuesday all day. I like to think, or, and then one of the things you'll hear people say is, man, is it just me, or is this week just dragging, or is this day has just been the longest day? I feel like I should be home already. What if it's a glitch in the matrix? You know, what if it's a, or what if time does speed up and slow down and we experience it, but we just think we're the only one experiencing it. That'll fry your noodle, right? Probably not the case, but time, you know, there is a question whether or not time is completely static, right? But I would think that all the parts that we use to experience time would also be affected by that speeding up and slowing down, and we wouldn't know it. So, man, this is going to turn into one of those trippy episodes, like when I got obsessed for a couple of episodes about what if prayer could change the past, that we would, none of us would ever know. Right? The past could be changing every day. The past could change every 10 minutes and we wouldn't know it. I don't want to start thinking about that, because it'll be stuck in my head for a couple of days. But you know, we experience time in different ways, right? You know, Mihai, Csikszentmihalyi, I always have to congratulate myself for the work that I put in learning how to say properly the name Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, the author of the book Flow, has the scientific studies about that. And he shows that when you're engaged with something, and especially when you're an activity where you're good at it, but it's challenging, but not too challenging, and the feedback is quick and you can adjust and everything, that time flies. You literally experience time as slipping away and you're done and you're like, oh man, am I done already? You know, that tracks to a real one of the factors of what we could call kind of the experiential happiness, so to speak, a happiness in the moment, the feeling of happiness, or a better word, the Greek word would be eudaimonia, a kind of a flourishing. You know, he taught, you know, that reminds me, evidently Aristotle wrote a eudaimonian ethics, and I can't remember if we have any of those fragments or have it still. I'd like to read that. So if anyone knows about the eudaimonian ethics of Aristotle, please email me at thecounterposition@gmail.com. Speaking of people who email me, Jeff Neal gets another shout out. Two shout outs in 2 days, because I asked a question. I give you guys homework. I ask you for feedback all the time, and you don't hardly give it to me. Jeff Neal has emailed me the last two times I've asked for feedback. Yesterday, I asked about the rebranding of the Counterposition and some ideas, and he immediately emailed me with that. Now, either Jeff has nothing going on in his world, or he's the only good man among you. I assume the truth is somewhere in between. All right, when we get back, I want to talk about C.S. Lewis a little bit. Why do I want to talk about C.S. Lewis? Because this is the 75th anniversary. Yesterday, I think it was the 75th anniversary of him doing The Weight of Glory, that famous sermon. So I got some ideas. So you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Wade.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your ever so, so humble host, Andrew M. Whaley. And we're going to talk about C.S. Lewis a little bit, I think. As long as I look at my notes and there's nothing else that needs to be talked about, and they are not. So, okay, Lewis, I guess like 75 years ago, he preached this sermon called The Weight of Glory, and it's been captured, and you can buy this, and I will admonish you probably 65 times in the rest of this episode to go buy The Weight of Glory or get it from the library, or if you can get it on Kindle. I just bought it on Kindle. I'd lost my paperback copy of it. I bought it on Kindle this morning to read over. It was $9.99. Okay, sidebar on something I saw on Kindle. Something I've done before, and I shouldn't tell you about this because it may get you to not listen to the counterposition as much, but you can buy some of these Kindle books. And you can, for anywhere from a few bucks to, this one was actually $12.99. It was more than the actual Kindle. But you can get the narration version as well, the audio version. And you can switch back and forth on through your Kindle app, and it'll pick up. You can read with your eyes going to bed, shut the book on your Kindle or on your iPhone, get up the next day, get in your car, hit it. It'll say, do you want us to pick up where you left off? You hit yes. And you can listen to that book on the way to work. And on the way back, and then when you get in bed that night, you can pick it up, and it's right where you left off. I burned through the two Sparrow novels and The Martian like that in like a couple of weeks. I mean, you can really burn through novels fast, but I don't want you to do that. I want you to listen to The Counterposition and all the other amazing shows on Breadbox Media and other cool stuff like Catching Foxes podcast, shout out to Luke and Gomer, and the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast. Shout out to Nepple, Rap, Goble, and the always lovely and talented Father Michael O'Loughlin of Holy Protection of the Mother of God Byzantine. Great podcast, awesome dudes. But, you know, most people have a lot of time to listen to a lot of crap because they're stuck in their car a lot. So, anyway, so C.S. Lewis, so he did this talk called The Weight of Glory. And I think it's in 1940, 41, so, you know, right about then. And so two things hit me initially just when I thought about that. So one of the very first things we read at Thomas Aquinas College is a thing called Learning in Wartime. And it's Lewis talking about why you would go to the trouble of learning anything interesting. You know what? It's included. I just not checked the table of contents. If you buy the Kindle version of The Weight of Glory, Learning in Wartime is there. These are all kind of like wartime lectures. So he's doing this erudite, beautiful sermon talking about all these beautiful things and how we have to, you know, experience things in this world and all this and in our longings and all this. And London had already been like strafed with bombs and stuff. So in Learning in Wartime, we read, it's like, why would we waste the time learning Greek or reading Sophocles or, you know, studying Thomas Aquinas or, you know, reading Augustine or, you know, doing Euclid or whatever, when there's bombs falling someplace, you know? Aren't these things more demanding? And he builds an argument that I'll just let you go read yourself for why that's worth doing. But so in this, the most well-known of these wartime lectures or wartime sermons is called The Weight of Glory. Now, so the first thing that hit me is that there's all these people, and I think that this was our Royal Air Force chaplains were in the audience and probably a bunch of students and undergraduates. This church was just packed by all accounts. I didn't take time. There's an introduction by Walter Hooper, his friend. And I didn't really get to read it, but he talks a little bit about the situation and how packed it was and everything. And so it just hit me like what a different time, just how crazy that is. That could you imagine in our country, in the United States of America, if you were sitting in, you know, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, or in Deloge, Missouri, someplace an hour or two away from St. Louis, and ISIS had just blown up half of St. Louis, Could you imagine a bunch of students and military people and stuff going on a weeknight just to packing into a big church to hear a beautiful oration about what life is all about, what the meaning of beauty is, and what the meaning of this longing in our hearts is about? I don't think there's any possible way. We are far, far too practical for that. I don't think there's any possible way that we would ever do that. The other thing that hit me, and this is kind of what I want to riff on just a little bit, and I may pull a quote or two out of Learning in Wartime. I just didn't have time to read it as well as I wanted to actually do any kind of exposition. But I'm going to go back through this, I think, tonight slowly. But there is just some beautiful ideas. Every time I read Lewis, I just got a copy of Mere Christianity, which I've probably given 30 or 40 of them away over the course of my life. I used to just hand them out like tracts if you were an evangelical on the corner of a college town or something, you know, just handing them out to people I knew. I think that Lewis is one of the most deeply sane human beings that has ever lived. Yes, he's erudite. Yes, he's really prolific, which is part of what I want to talk about. But man, just, I cannot possibly recommend more just the deep, deep, clear sanity of C.S. Lewis. Chesterton has a really deep, rich sanity, maybe even more so, because he understands madness so well. But Chesterton's sanity is so communicated through whimsy and kind of he's such a master of the English language, and he has such a playful mind that it sometimes it could almost get in the way of understanding the deep, deep architectonic sanity of his thought. But Lewis, though very whimsical at times and completely charming in the way he writes and a master himself of the English language, he writes in a way that you can just see how solid and grounded in reality he is. And so that, and The Weight of Glory is such a great example of that 75 years ago. But what hit me, they were talking about him, you know, him and Arnie were living in the kilns with this old woman who was a mother of a friend of theirs that had died. And the gardener, Lewis never learned how to drive. The gardener comes and picks him up. Oh, you know what? Shout out to Sherry Waddell, too, because Sherry put this on the Forming Intentional Disciples group on Facebook, and I got a little ping when she put something up. And this is how I was notified that this was the 75th anniversary of The Weight of Glory. So shout out to Sherry Waddell. If you haven't read Forming Intentional Disciples, go do it ASAP. Another very sane, very practical book. So I was reading the little article she linked before I downloaded it, and you know, Lewis never learned how to drive. So the gardener, who he just adored and loved, who's just a good man, put him in the car. So the gardener put him in the car, drove him 15 minutes over to this giant church. So he couldn't drive himself, you know, and he just like leaves this house that he shares. Speaking of sharing that particular house, the kilns, a shout out to Rachel Shunk. I always use the word girl, just like there's boys and girls, you know, just that's the big demarcation in the world. A woman who I went to college with, who was part of that small Christian community that has now taken over the kilns, and Christian scholars live there. And Rachel actually lived in the kilns, and I think she actually had Lewis's old bedroom. And you will see pictures on her Facebook page sometimes from that time where she's sitting at that desk with that window behind her that you always see those famous pictures of Lewis sitting there. So God bless you, Shunk. That's amazing. I wish I could do cool stuff like that. The gardener picks him up, takes him over here, and this place is just packed, right? But what hit me, and this is probably what I'm going to talk about for the rest of the show, and kind of move around on a little is Lewis was 42 years old. I mean, I think of Lewis, I think of everybody who wrote a long time ago as being so much older than me. You know, I recently had the experience. I put on Facebook, I was joking around that Vladimir Solovyev is my hair hero. I've been growing my hair out and he's got the coolest hair. His hair looks like my hair when it's really grown out on its best day. And I was like joking that Vladimir Solovyev is my hair hero. But I just remember seeing this picture of Solovyev and he's like a kid. He's got a beard and long hair, but he's a kid. I mean, he's just a kid when he wrote some of this stuff that I think is so brilliant. And that's the case with a lot of these classic works. But Lewis was 42 years old. I'm 45, about to turn 46 years old. Lewis was way younger than me when he was writing and delivering something like Learning in Wartime or The Weight of Glory. Oh man, I tell you what, that destroys me. That makes me feel like I've done absolutely nothing in this world. I'm so far behind. Oh goodness. But so I'm going to talk a little bit about that theme, about, you know, just kind of time and what you get done with it over the course of your life a little bit. So let's head off to the break and we'll come back for the final lap. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely. Oh, I'm lovely. And I'm done.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so I want to switch from talking about Lewis per se. I think I've given a thorough enough. The only thing I wanted to do was mark the occasion of the 75th anniversary and then encourage you to buy, download, steal, whatever, The Weight of Glory by C.S. Lewis. I'm sure if you put it into Google, there's a PDF out there somewhere. But $9.99, Kindle, you can own all those, like $6.99 for a paperback, I think it was. That's something that should be on your shelf, The Weight of Glory and other essays. And another essay you should own by Lewis, figure out where it's at. There's another little paperback full of essays. And sometimes you'll see it bundled with The Weight of Glory, and there's a little thicker edition. Is Myth Became Fact. There is something to counteract a lot of the propaganda you'll hear about the history of Christianity and the person of Christ. So Lewis is 42 years old. He's teaching in Oxford. He's writing books. He's giving these big lectures and sermons. A few years later, he's going to be on the cover of Time magazine. He's 42 years old. Now, a lot of you are thinking, yeah, he's 42. I mean, you should have done a lot of crap by the time you're 42. You should have learned a language or two. You should probably be proficient in this or that mode of thought or whatever. You know, I was like, I remember being shocked that, Paul Ryan and I were roughly the same age. I'm like, they're trying to get the guy to run for president of the United States. I think the problem is I'm immature and I still think of myself as a kid. So this is where I do my occasional reminder of what this show is, which is the filtering of reality through an individual human person and the communication of that experience, hoping that my experience of reality and the people that I bring on the show will be in some way helpful or interesting, or at least give you someone to pity. And so before I even got started on the Lewis thing this morning, I saw a picture of Whitney and Brooke Collins with their oldest daughter. Shout out to Whitney and Brooke. And Brooke Collins, formerly Davidson, was a friend of mine, and we were two of the Missouri squad at Thomas Aquinas College. Shout out to the Show Me State. And that is this picture of this family I know, and I know that they have kids. Yeah, it's like, but here's she has a daughter starting middle school. I was in college with her, and she was unmarried, and we were friends. And she's moved on, got a husband, has some kids, and now there's this grown, you know, all this teenage girl that's going off. You know, every time I see one of my friends that has like teenagers, I mean, I was 25 years old when my dad was the age I am now. I think I forget that I've lived this weird single life and I'm 45, and it hits me over the head occasionally when I have a blinding flash of the obvious, like my friends have kids, you know, I could, you know, the girl that, her mom and I were engaged back in the 90s. I was just talking to her last night. Shout out to Heather and Clara. And, you know, I used to have to babysit her and give her potty help and stuff, and you know, like help her get ready and stuff. You know, she's a little girl. She's like 4 years old. You know, she's a grown woman buying her own pint of beer now. And I'm like, that just seems crazy to me. And I think that if you're single and you don't, I think the passage of time is just different for you, you know. Now, and that kind of sometimes that makes me think, oh, okay, you've missed it. There's no reason for you to get married. If you get married, you're just going to have kids, and then you're going to be 70 years old, you know, with kids in high school. And that's when another blinding flash of the obvious happens to me, that I say, yeah, but I'm Catholic. So I was probably going to have the kids that if I had a wife that's a few years younger than me, you know, or even just 2-3 years younger than me, I'm probably going to have a kid in my early 40s at least. And, you know, so it's not like you're not going to have those kids in high school when you're 70. You probably will. You're just not going to have all those other kids before them. So these are the crazy thoughts that go through the mind of a single man grasping at the idea that his life has slipped away from him. But when you see Lewis and you see somebody like Thomas Merton, I feel like an absolute slacker who has absolutely wasted my life. And I have. I've burned way too much time looking at stupid crap on the internet. If I had taken all the time that I spent looking at cat videos and funny memes and just exchanging pleasantries with old friends and just watching, you know, brain candy television because I'm tired or whatever. If I'd have spent all that time studying a little bit, I would like be able to read Greek now easily. I would probably have a PhD or something, you know? And so it's not like I haven't done anything. It's, you know, I went back to college late, got a degree from a good school. I've built and sold a company. I've had some adventures. I've, you know, done some things in this world, built some beautiful, you know, friendships, acquired some skills. But I just look at both at what people had done by a certain age and just realize, wow, I just didn't apply myself in this world. It's like, or you read like some of these, you read a biography of somebody, like you read like about, you know, the biography, I don't know, of Descartes or somebody. And it's like, well, he went to this school from this time to this time. And then he began studying and he graduated with his, you know, he got his doctorate and started teaching. And he was like 22 or something. You're just like, things used to happen earlier and faster back in the day. Maybe it was because we had so many less distractions. I think there's something to that. Or maybe there was just less to learn. You know, there's so much more information floating around today. But then you see like Merton. Here's Merton. And you look at this guy and you look at the just absolute volume of output in books, in reviews, in poetry, in drawings, and just this massive corpus of handwritten letters in correspondence with people. And then you realize that you look at the output and you compare it to his timeline, And there are these years, like a decade or more, maybe two decades, where at least a decade, where the guy was doing the full on monk thing, right? He was a Trappist monk with a normal monk schedule, which meant that he had like 45 minutes of free time to himself a day to sit down and write some correspondence or work on something. I wasted 45 minutes this morning easily. I'm just absolutely amazed by that. So yeah, Lewis was 42 when he was almost 4 years younger than me. And Merton had 45 minutes of free time a day. That just shocks me. So this final segment, you're just getting me woefully beating myself up about being useless or being just, yeah, just not giving myself. So I'm making a commitment. I've been trying to read more here lately. There's a process. If you want to become educated, you have to buy books and read them. And I'm really good at the first half of that. I buy a lot of books. I own a serious amount of books. And I think that I've often said that I think purgatory is going to be, I'm just going to be stuck in purgatory, like in an uncomfortable chair with, like, it's a little too hot and kind of humid. And there's some, you know, a couple of bugs bugging me and there's a lot of distractions. And I have to read all the books that I bought and never read before I'm going to be allowed in heaven, you know. But and maybe it'll be one of the views that's out there of the afterlife. Maybe I'll be stuck there reading these books and it'll just be like hell. And then it'll slowly become a little more purgative. And then one day I'll look up and realize that this is heaven, you know. But the activity won't change at all. Maybe I'll change. That's the. But anyway, so I've tried to become dedicated to, and this is easier during the summer because there's no new brain. Well, there's always new Brain Candy TV coming on now that we have 6,000 channels and online stuff. But in the winter time, it's so easy to come home, cook some dinner, get something to eat. By that time, it's like 7:30. And you're like, I want to go to bed at like 9:30, 10. You're really beat. You could sit down and read. I know I'll be glad if I sit down and read. I could work on my book. But instead, no. I watch Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and have another glass of wine. And then I'm super tired and I go to bed and sleep poorly. So summer has been good to help me fix that. So I'm making you guys my accountability partners. If you don't hear me talking about something I read, then you get to write me a mean email and chastise me. So you know what? Speaking of that kind of discipline, shout out to Perry West, my roommate and good friend, somewhat mentee at times. And Perry's a writer and he's trying, an incredible musician. He's trying to work on his fiction. And this guy's been getting up like 5 a.m. and writing for like an hour and a half before he goes to work every day. So I'm going to out Perry and talk about how disciplined and amazing he is. So he's going to get mad for it because I talked about his good stuff in public. But anyway, see, I have no concept of time. Show's over. Let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out. I'm going to go read.
I take your place in marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.